Good morning, travelers and diners. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig.
We got it all confused. You had travelers and diners instead of diners and travelers. We probably should have said Peter Haig and Ann Haig. that would have been different.
What are we doing today?
Oh, we've got the dessert equivalent of the Energizer Bunny.
Oh, yeah.
Emily Lucchetti. Then we've got a fascinating story all about bees. And then to finish up the program, some of the sweetest things that you'd ever like to hear about. And then a preview. At the end of the program, as long as you remember, we'll tell you about some of the adventures we have upcoming that we think you're going to be interested in. But in the meantime, let's go back to the person that I very respectfully call the Energizer Bunny, Emily Lucchetti, who seems to have time to do practically everything, and she's up to something new.
Our favorite pastry chef, Emily Lucchetti. You're becoming, Emily, a regular on the menu.
Hi, how are you guys?
Yeah, we're fine. And I guess that we always have something new to talk to you about. This time, you have established your own web presence, and the site is what?
It's EmilyLucchetti.com, so it's just my name with .com, and it's a website where I have a bunch of my recipes up, and then I even have, you know, recipes divided into categories like, you know, chocolate, fruit, that kind of thing, and then I even have a category of what's for dinner besides chocolate, because even I don't always eat chocolate for dinner.
And that's EmilyLucchetti, listeners.
Correct.
And you're going to get recipes that are interesting, delicious, but also accessible, which I think is one of your characteristics, Emily.
Yeah, well, you know, that's what I've always tried to do. I think, you know, if it's one thing, I may do a fancier dessert in one of the restaurants that I work with, because when someone comes into a restaurant, they want, you know, something they might not necessarily make at home. But when you make something at home, you don't want to spend all day slaving by the stove. And I know I don't, too, because I actually bake at home for when friends and company come over. And you don't want to be exhausted. At the same time, you want it to taste really, really good.
Well, who will use this site?
Well, I hope everybody will use this site. I hope people will use it that already know how to bake and that are looking for new recipes, as well as people that are just kind of venturing out into the baking world. I also have a blog as part of it, and, you know, the people on blogging have been around for quite a while now, and I've really not ventured into that foray, but I decided to this time because I didn't want to necessarily just tell people who I had over for dinner and what chocolate dessert or anything like that I made, but what I want to do is be able to give people information. Yes, people want to hear human interest stories and things like that, but especially being in California where so much of our produce is grown, you know, how is it, what happens, and how is a berry grown? Where are the places where you can get a lot of this stuff? So I want it to be educating as much as it is human interest.
Well, you know, I don't know where you find the time to do this. I mean, you have two restaurants. You're executive pastry chef at the Farallon, which has gone on for a while, and the new Water Bar, which you said is doing very fine. Right.
Yeah, well, I'm very fortunate that I have wonderful staff in each, and we have a team of people at each of the restaurants that are responsible for the day-to-day operation of making the dessert. And then together we create new menu items and I go in there and check and see how they're doing and stuff. And it really works out wonderfully, and we're a real team. And, you know, a lot of them are much younger than I am, so they're happy to be in the kitchen 12 hours
a day. Doesn't that make a difference?
I used to be happy doing that, but now I'm just too old and I can't do it anymore. So I have to think of things where I can do sitting down.
Well, let's face it, Emily. What happened is you've always been used to being so busy, so you sort of got bored and you needed more things to do.
Right. And it's interesting, too, because the wonderful thing about website, you know, I've done tons of TV, and even when you do radio, people have to listen to you at certain times. But now with the Internet, I mean, they can catch On the Menu on the Internet, which is great.
Yeah.
Or they can buy something on the Internet. Someone can check it at 2 in the morning if they want to, if that's when they're up and that's when they're interested in learning something about desserts. They don't have to wait until, look at their TV schedule and say, Saturday at 11 a.m., I'm going to go watch that show.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean,
so
it's
this instant gratification thing, right? It's called, I want it now.
Yeah, and some of that's good in our society and some of it's not good. But we hope if it's with chocolate chip cookies, that's the good side.
Well, if somebody has a dessert rush coming on, they ought to go to the right place to get a recipe rather than just go out and buy something, for heaven's
sake. Yeah, well, and the other two, as far as finding recipes, I mean, if you typed in chocolate chip cookies, we were talking about that before, you'd get thousands and thousands of recipes. And how do you sort them out so people, you know that what recipe is good and what's not? And you almost need the pedigree of either Gourmet or Epicurious or hopefully EmilyLucchetti.com. They'll say, okay, I know her, I trust her, I can weed through all this too much information and kind of decipher and say, okay, I'll give this one a try.
This is true. Now, you were a veteran cookbook author. How many cookbooks do you have? Why don't you just run through them for our listeners?
I have. My first two books I wrote when I was the pastry chef of Stars Restaurant, and they're called Stars Desserts and Four Star Desserts. And then I wrote A Passion for Desserts, which is geared towards the seasons, the summer, winter, spring, and fall are the chapters. And each season, you know, we eat dessert differently, you know, with as far as ingredients, even chocolate that's available year-round, we eat differently just because in summer you might want it in ice cream, in the winter you want a warm chocolate, you know, cake or something like that. And then my book after that was A Passion for Ice Cream, and it was all about making homemade ice cream and different things to do with it. Like there's one chapter called With Your Fingers, and it's all 20 different kinds of ice cream sandwiches. And what's nice about that book, too, is you can even go out and buy ice cream and then do a lot of the desserts if you didn't want to make your own. And then my first two books were reprinted into classic Stars Desserts, and I changed, I updated a lot of the recipes.
Yeah, I like that one. One of my favorites.
We had you on talking about that one, didn't we?
Right, and because after you've written five books, I look back on that first book, and as much as I love it and love all the recipes, I look at some of the writing of the recipes, and I say, well, you know, gosh, I've learned in 5 years how to say this better. And then what was fun about that book, too, is Peter Palmer, who's the wine director at Farallon, wrote a whole section in the beginning about desserts and dessert wine and pairing and all that. So that was really exciting. Bill worked with him on that.
No, Do you like dessert wines?
I remember that part of it. And as an incredible, she's not very keen on desserts, but dessert wines are an absolute total no-no. It's good news for me because when we're doing wine pairings, I get two glasses of that one.
Yeah, well, exactly. You get the wine. And also what's nice is they are available by the glass, you know, and if you do get a whole bottle, most of them are only half bottles, so it's easier to put down.
Now, do you have any involvement with the Food Network now?
No, I don't.
It's really evolved. What do you think about where it is now?
I think, like any network, I think some of their shows are absolutely great, and I have some that just I can see why they would have very high ratings, but they're just not like my cup of tea. I mean, one of the shows I absolutely love is Ace of Cakes, and on the one hand, his style is so different from anything that I would ever do.
And who is what's his name again?
Duff. I forget what his last name is. I think his first name or his last name is Duff, and it's so not my style, but I really enjoy watching it because, one, he has such a passion for what he does, and he's a bit of a character, but he's also so good at what he does.
I
really respect that.
Well, that's good to know. I think somebody offered us to have him on the show, and I don't think I knew enough about him.
I watched that Top Chef Masters the other night, and that's an interesting program. I remember Rick Noonan was on, and he didn't get his course done in time.
it's
sort of like that never happened before, but it happened to him.
Well, it's funny. I was watching it one night, and there was another chef. I forget which one it was, but it was a very well-known chef, and he didn't finish either. And it's actually one time I saw it, I was very impressed with the camaraderie between, you know, all the chefs, and no one was really showing big egos or anything, because I think they all realized it was a bit humbling.
Well, you know,
that's the way it appeared. It appeared that it was all sort of good, clean fun, and if I could manage to stay up that late, I'd probably stay up and watch it again.
and I give them a lot of credit for doing that, too, because you want it that to be fun. It should be fun. It shouldn't be an ego-driven, I have to win, and, you know, we're not in this together, and especially, you know, the money's for charity, too, so.
Yeah, we asked Michael Chiarello, who's on the show, we said, because when we interviewed him out in California, we said, now you know who won, don't you? Aren't you going to tell us? And he said, of course, I absolutely can't do that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the my Twitter buddies, he tweets live on for the Top Chef show. And he lost, he said, 75 followers, Twitter followers, because was a spoiler. He revealed the
my goodness,
because they were on West Coast Town. He's in Florida.
That's pretty gross. So Emily, so after you got this one running, what are you going to do next?
I don't know.
Well, you're doing a new book. You said
I have my new book it's due to the publisher in 2010. And it's called The Terrified Baker, and it's all for beginning bakers, for people who don't necessarily want an encyclopedia on how to bake, and they don't really care about the difference between baking soda and baking powder. They just want to be able to follow a recipe, and so when their friends come over, it's Thanksgiving that they can make something for their family. And so what we're going to have, like, the top five baking tips that you should pay attention to, kind of generically, and then in the cookie chapter, we'll say the same thing, the top five or top three or whatever they are, cooking tips, and keep it very simple and very kind of streamlined, so it's not too much information, because people come to me and they say, oh, I don't bake, you know, when they hear about what I do for a living. I say, you're a lawyer, you passed the bar, you gave birth to two children, I said, if you can do those, you can make brownies. It's really not that difficult. It's just people they just see a recipe and they see instructions and then they get nervous. And they said, recipe is there as a guide, it's not there to trip you up. There is a guide to help you through it. So,
see, I think the problem with desserts is the photographs are intimidating in all these cookbooks because, you know, you start out baking, your stuff doesn't look like that.
Well, it's very interesting that you say that because, you know, in all my books I've had a lot of photographs because I think 50% of the time people want a photograph because they want to know what it looks like and what it's supposed to look like. But you're 100% right, because they look at it and they say, well, mine's not going to look like that. So in this book, we're actually not going to have photographs. We're going to have illustrations and stuff.
Oh, interesting.
So I'll give you a report in a year or so about whether or not people find it less intimidating. Because, you know, after so many books, I agree with you. People just... I think they get scared, like, oh, I can't do that.
Well, let's do the parameters again, Emily.
Tell us
how people can get on the website.
Yeah, it's www.emilylucchetti.com, and it's my name. It's EmilyLucchetti. And you'll see within that, on the one-hand side, there's a button, too, for the blog. But you can also get straight to the blog by going emilylucchettiblog.com.
Well, as usual, it's wonderful talking to you, and I hope that the site is a success and the cookbook goes well, the next one.
Thank you very much.
And say hello to all of our San Fran friends, would you?
I will. Okay. I will. I definitely will. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, Emily.
Lovely to talk to you again, Emily.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
And now it's time to take a break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. Just remember that it's all about being connected, so we hope that you stay connected to On the Menu Radio.
Which is why we put all those nice new buttons for Facebook and all that kind of stuff.
Email, blogs.
Right on the homepage. We just
Twitter,
love to hear.
Facebook, you name it.
Yeah, and likes the Twitter best of all, I think. And Peter likes the blog best of all, and everybody likes to get email.
And I love this next group. I love the Savannah Bee Company.
Well, first of all, we love bees, and we realize the importance of bees, but we realize it even more after having talked to this wonderful young man whose first name I've forgotten, but his last name is Denard. so you'll find out who it is soon enough.
Ted Dennard, or Denard, as the case may be, is unique. He's the founder of a company, and he also is their beekeeper. Welcome to On the Menu, Ted.
Thank you very much.
As I told you, I love bees. Absolutely love them. I even like that little thing. Is it an allergy commercial where they have the French bee?
Oh, okay. I haven't seen that, but
oh, it's so cute. Anyhow, but I've watched bees move like that. They did a really good animation job. But anyhow, let's talk about your company, which is the Savannah Bee Company. You're in Savannah, and how did you come to be the founder of a company that essentially makes honey and a related product?
The beginning of the story is that an older gentleman taught me beekeeping when I was a little boy, and I just did it as a hobby throughout my entire life. Through college, taught it in the Peace Corps, never wanted to do it as a business, and then was convinced to sell a few jars of honey to one store in Savannah, and then another store called, and another, and it just started like a domino effect. So that was about 9 years ago, and I decided to try and do it more like a business 7.5 years ago, and now we sell to 2,000 stores all over the country and a little bit around the world. It was really by mistake. It wasn't intentional. It just happened.
Now, is there something about Savannah that makes it particularly good for bees, or it just happens that you live there?
Well, a little bit of both. A little bit of both. One is I do live here and love it, and the other thing, though, is that the climate here is really good for bees, and kind of all over this part of Georgia, southern part of Georgia, because our flowering season lasts from, basically January to November, so the bees always have something to feed on and eat, and so there's a lot of people that raise bees and even queen bees and sell them all over the world.
Right, so the bees don't have to go somewhere else, whereas in Pennsylvania, where the flower season is a lot shorter, I guess the seasons when there are no flowers, the bees have to go somewhere else?
Yeah, well, they don't have to, but it's either you have to feed or leave a lot of honey on your beehives, or take them somewhere where they can feed on something else. If you want to make more honey, you'd have to move them. The other good thing about being in Savannah is that the tupelo trees grow near here.
You know, what are those? That's a very special honey, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes. It's arguably one the best honey. And the tupelo trees grow in the rivers, right where the cypress trees grow. It's a real unique ecosystem. And they produce a nectar for the bees to gather and make honey with that is more fructose sugars than glucose sugars. So it really, it has a different sweet. It can never crystallize. I mean, it tastes great. Everybody, it used to be known as the only honey diabetics can eat because it has these, lebulose or fructose sugars.
Now, something's happening with the Savannah Bee Company in terms of the way its product is coming to market, and I think you have some kind of new device. And those were the things that really brought you onto our radar screen. Can you tell us a little bit about that, Ted?
Absolutely, yes. We have been selling, really special single flower varietal honey, and we've done, it's done really well, surprisingly well. But we sell in those specialty, gourmet, high-end, real swanky food markets around the country. I once read that 3 out of 10 people will buy honey. And so what we have done is created basically new labels and are putting a specific purpose behind a specific honey. For instance, we have a honey that is best for grilling, and then we have a honey that is best with cheese and one that is best with tea. And because of the difference in flavor and sugars, honeys are really not all equal. They're very different, and they act different on your palate, and they complement things differently. So we are attempting to tell people, just so they don't have to do any navigating, or don't have to really figure this out for themselves. We just tell them this is best for this.
Well, you did a lot of research to determine this.
Well, a lot of maybe a little less, not so much book research, but a lot of trial and error and tasting and a lifetime of eating honey, and I'm sure there's some personal bias in there, but I feel like since I've known honey and bees since I was a little kid, I ought to know at least as much as, a little more than the next person anyway.
Well, you have those three types, and you also have a way of dispensing it that you say is dripless.
Right. We have also, again, just another, trying to eliminate one more barrier. We have a pump that will go onto this bottle, and it will allow you to dispense the honey without mess and without having to ever touch the lid and put a, you know, get a sticky finger and, you know, you really never even have to lift a jar up necessarily.
Well, you know, those funny round things, those plastic honey servers, they're a mess.
Yes, aren't they?
Yes. I have no idea why anybody adopted that as the best way to get honey.
Yeah. No, it's really a little bit of sticky is a lot of stick, and we battle that every day in our warehouse, I can tell you.
Oh,
that.
Yeah, I bet
okay,
you.
Okay, now these products, the new flavors, they're not quite on the market yet, but they're going to be very soon?
We begin delivery on August 3rd, and so the labels have been approved and are re-imprinted right now, and we've got a whole bunch of orders, and we're going to begin shipping on August 3rd.
Great. Now, and when you say shipping to what kinds of outlets?
Well, so far it's just a lot of, like, you know, sole proprietor-type businesses, just single stores that, again, these specialty gourmet stores that are in, you know, usually one in every town. That's who we're first shipping to because we just did a few trade shows where those were the people that attended. We also had a lot of interest from some of the bigger people like Williams-Sonoma and the like. But they work, you know, 6 and 12 months out, so we won't be shipping directly to them.
Okay, great. Well, it's a really fascinating introduction to the world of honey, making honey simpler, making honey less messy. Both are great things. But now, before we – oh, I'm sorry.
In addition to your single origin artisanal honeys, you have some flavored honeys, do you?
Well, they're not – no, we don't have any –
I didn't mean flavored. I was going to say you have raw honeys. What's the difference between the ordinary honey and the raw? You only serve that with a honeycomb. What do you do?
Yes, I understand. Right, we have there's all kinds of ways of saying like pure and raw and U.S. grade A and all this. But basically, if it says honey, it should only be honey. And that's kind of that's actually a USDA regulation.
The flavors from the trees or the flowers or whatever it is the bees are into.
Exactly. So the way I see it, sort of in a poetic triangle kind of where the sun's energies, you know, collected by the plant, it makes simple sugars, put some of that in the nectary of a flower to call the pollinator over. Mm-hmm. And while the bee is collecting pollen and shaking pollen down into the pistil for the flower, it's also collecting nectar, and it's the nectar that the bee makes the honey from. And so, yeah, the each tree is going to impart its own sort of characteristics, and it could be a dark, strong, smoky flavor, or it could be a very light, subtle, just, you know, a vanilla hint or something. You know, it just really depends on the type of flower, and it's amazing.
The difference you said here, you know, that like fine wines, as soon as you taste these different honeys, you know how different they are.
We're fond of doing honey tastings so that people really get the
taste. Oh, you do honey tastings, huh? What do you serve the honey on when you do a honey tasting?
Well, if we're just doing the varietal honeys, we do, and when I say varietal, I mean they're from a single flower source, meaning, you know, they went to the Tupelo blossoms to make Tupelo honey or the orange blossoms to make orange blossom honey. And they have to visit 2 million flowers to make 1 pound of honey. So they're really working hard to do that.
They're really busy as bees, huh?
Yeah.
Right, yeah. So single flower is kind of a misnamed.
How do you keep them from sort of getting off track and slurping up a little something from another flower?
Well, you know, you got to depend on weather being right for you, and that's never a certainty. But you take your beehives and place them in an area where the only flower that is blooming at that moment is that type of flower. Okay. So in the Tupelo swamps, we have to haul the bees down in there in late April. The tree blooms for about 10 days, and we take all the honey boxes off. So you've seen those white bee boxes, beehives, they can have as many as 5 or 6 boxes. Generally, the bottom box is where the queen is laying eggs, and that's the brood chamber where she's got eggs, larvae, pupa, and emerging adults.
Right.
And then the boxes atop that are honey supers, and so you take take all the honey supers off, and then when the nectar begins to come in from the tupelo flowers, you put empty boxes on for them to fill that.
Now, what? Where do you get this honeycomb? I mean, does it?
Well, and then the honeycomb, the liquid honey that is spun out, meaning it's been the honeycombs have been taken out of the off the hive, the caps cut off because the bees make a bunch of hexagonal cells. When it's filled with honey, they cap it with a little beeswax cap. So you slice that cap open, and then you put it in a stainless steel basket that's in a stainless steel drum, and the basket spins around, and it slings the honey out of the honeycombs, and you just collect it from a spout at the bottom of that drum. So that's how you get honey from honeycomb. You can also do a little bit different method and get honeycomb that you can eat. You could eat any honeycomb, but generally the honey that you're spinning out has wires that you've embedded in the frame so that the honeycomb doesn't bend when you're spinning it out. It doesn't touch the honey or hurt the honey or anything. It just supports that honeycomb.
I've eaten honeycombs with no wires.
Yeah, but he's got... Right.
You put a real thin sheet of beeswax. I mean, you read the paper through it, and you glue it in the frame with beeswax, melted beeswax. So that's how you start honeycomb, and then they'll make the honeycomb straight, hopefully. And then you take that frame out of the beehive and just cut the comb right out of the frame and place it in a box. And that's how we cut and sell honeycombs. And we put that with cheese. So we put that in the middle of a platter between like three different varieties of cheese, like a blue cheese and a manchego and maybe a white cheddar. And we then put some green apples and raspberries around it, and it makes a beautiful, beautiful tray. And you just eat it with bread or just on the apples.
I mean, things is fascinating. You also do like hand cream, beeswax, and salves, and I've had royal jelly stuff, creams and stuff, and it's really very good.
Are we going to ask Ted before he goes about colony collapse disorder?
Yeah, I wanted to say that I think everybody suddenly realized they've taken honeybees for granted, and all of a sudden we're getting a shortage of them. I mean, you say that it's like the oldest ancient animal still living today, huh?
Well, I would say sort of the reading I've done says that they started evolving into honeybees about 150 million years ago. And they've been around a long time.
But we couldn't do anything without them, basically, could we?
So is the CCD, is it real?
Is the CCD real? The colony collapse disorder. I believe it is real, but is it? I don't believe that it's that different from some of the same things we've been suffering from for a couple decades. In the beginning days, when I was first starting working with bees, the worst thing you had to worry about was foul brood, American foul brood, and it was a pretty bad little...
What was that?
It was like a bacterial spore, and it was... But it was really bad when you got it, but that was just one thing to worry about. But in the mid-80s, mite came over to our continent and started infecting our bees. And this mite, we started losing all our bees. By the early 90s, I know in Georgia, over 90% of all the feral bees, because honeybees were brought here from Europe, were gone. They were dead because of these mites. And then we learned that it was the viruses that the mites brought and passed on to the bees. That was really what was hurting the bees. And there was a second mite introduced, and it's been a rough road since really the mid 80s, and then certainly over the last 15 years, we've had, real difficulties, and the same type of scenarios that people are describing with colony collapse, where you'll lose, come springtime, you've got half your bees gone.
That's scary.
It is. Part of the good news is that, it's been going on for a while, and we're still keeping bees, and it's a little bit more work, so some of the older folks have gotten out of it, but you just have to split your surviving hives and create new hives in the early spring and get your numbers back up for honey time. So that's what people do, and that's how they've been kind of, mitigating these losses. Is the other good news is that the media grabbed onto the mystery aspect of this cognitive collapse disorder and cell phones and all this, and so but what it really did was really push the knowledge that we are very dependent upon bees for many of the foods that we like to eat. And you know, of course, the plant world and the birds and the animals are all also dependent on bees. And pollinators in general have been in peril for quite some time from insecticides and habitat destruction and all that. And it's just kind of given people a good wake-up call. So I think it's timely.
Is there something dramatic called for us to do to stop this collapse or not?
Well, the last I heard was that they think it may be a virus that lays dormant, and I think there's viruses that humans can get too that they don't come out until you become stressed. And I will be going to the World Bee Congress in September in France, and it's every other year, but I'm looking forward to hearing what's the latest and greatest. But that's the last I've heard, that it's probably some strain of a virus that just sits dormant, and then when the bees become stressed, and that could be by moving them, it could be by who knows what, just the mites themselves and the viruses, then all of a sudden this other virus comes out and just really takes the bees down.
Well, Ted, would you be sure to call us when you get back from France and let us know what the latest is?
I sure would. I hope to find out. I really do. We're gonna get to the bottom of it because we have to. I think you started talking about how you love honeybees, and so do I, and so do beekeepers, but all the agricultural crops and farmers, I mean, they depend on them, so it's so important that we have to figure it out, and I have confidence that we will.
Now, how do people get a hold of Savannah Bee, just before you sign off?
Oh, well, you can, the easiest is to go online and go to savannahbee.com, and you can also call us and get our information there, or if you wanted to get stuff, you can also get on our website is a find a store kind of thing where you can pick up your state and see that. But email ted@savannahbee.com, and I'll be happy to answer any questions anybody has.
Well, Ted, we know you're busy as a bee.
We caught you between meetings, I know.
We better let you go back to your pals. Thank you so much for joining us on the menu.
Absolutely. I'm honored. Thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah, Ted. Keep up the good work and kiss those bees for me.
I will.
Thank you.
All right, you guys take care.
Thanks, Ted. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And now we can take another break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Okay, you're back with On the Menu Radio with Ann and Peter Haig, and we're delighted, of course, that you're with us today, and we have a sweet ending for you. Well, a sweet ending. A sweet ending. First of all, a company that's dedicated to the most stylish-looking brownies you've ever seen, a company called Maris New York.
Yeah, well, Mari, of course, is the design background.
There we go, yeah. But anyway, it's a really neat story.
She graduated from Parsons.
Yeah, and then...
product looks so good.
Yeah, but the great thing about it is it tastes good, and I just ate the last one.
Did you?
Last night.
You
so
ate all of them.
There are none left.
One little bite.
Well, okay, you had one little bite. We talked about that on another occasion. No, we actually talked about it during the interview, I remember now. And then a lady who has dedicated her life, aside from architecture, to memorializing the wonderful products available in Sonoma County in an unusual way, making syrups out of them. And, we'll just have her explain it because it's a complicated story.
She's very poetic.
Yeah, very poetic. And she also chases around the vineyard with a beagle. There's a variety of other things. It's a really interesting story.
Mari Tuttle, I want the whole story of how you ended up making these wonderful brownies. This is Mari's New York, and you are the founder and the baker of this?
Yes.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about the company. I mean, how long has it been in business? How did you decide to open a bakery or a confectionery? How would you describe it?
Well, it started about 2.5 years ago. We launched in November of 2006, and it's My path has been, I would say, not your traditional baker path. I started in product design and moved into food, and I can go into more detail of those things, where I went to Parsons School of Design for product design.
Yeah, that's good.
And designed a lot of OXO Good Grips kitchen utensils.
Oh, did you? They're wonderful. Congratulations.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. It's a great company. And so the company that I worked for was a consulting firm called Smart Design, and they worked on a myriad of different products from mainly consumer goods, but they also now do web development, et cetera, et cetera. So OXO Good Grips Reach toothbrushes, and an interesting client came, and there was Kellogg's, who had asked us to look at food as product. And to give a little background, my mom is a chef. She's a Japanese chef who studied in Japan and had always been practicing her recipes on us when we were little.
Oh, and, she's a chef in New York, too?
And others, but being Japanese in the United States early on, it was very difficult to find Japanese ingredients, like shiitake mushrooms. Like, you know, nobody heard of shiitake mushrooms when we were little, too.
If you talk to, what's his name, he said when he first came?
Oh, Jacques Pepin.
Jacques Pepin said he couldn't find anything.
Except
white button mushrooms.
Yeah, and we were like, what do I do with this? You know, and in Japan, like, they don't have ovens. So, you know, a lot of her cooking techniques had to be modified to the Western kitchen. So she was always adapting her Japanese recipes and methodologies to the Western method.
Uh-huh.
Or trying to find things that would closely assimilate ingredients to her palate.
This is a real long story.
I know. So she would always.
I'm trying to figure out how it explained your opening a brownie shop.
So she was always playing around with different recipes and ingredients, and, you know, some were successful. So there was always that playfulness in the kitchen. And mom was also very attentive to plating of what her food looked like.
Oh, yeah. That's that Japanese sensibility, yeah.
Exactly. So, and, you know, anytime we would eat dinner, there'd be multiple dishes. So you're not getting one giant thing, but you'd have a little of this, a little of that, and, you know, different flavor combinations always presented sort of at once. So with that, and then with my product design background, I also worked for Cynthia Rowley on her home line at Target. So there was a lot of design. Wait, I'm sorry, I'm jumping a little bit. I worked at Balthazar for 2 years. It was a great experience. I learned a lot. After Kellogg's had come to Smart Design to ask us to look at food as product, I thought, my goodness, that's it. That's my two loves. My food background from my mom and my product design background, I can try and make food as product. So I looked at the French Culinary Institute, and it was pretty expensive at the time when I was looking, and I was like, I just can't really swing that. So a friend of mine was working at Balthazar, and I said, you know, do you think I can go talk to somebody in the kitchen, and maybe I can go do an internship or an apprenticeship so I can learn? And so I went, and I said, you know, I'll work for free. And they said, of course, you're going to work for free. And so I worked there for 2 years, and I learned a whole lot about French pastry. And that was, I'd say, the backbone of why I'm able to start my own bakery business.
What all you make? Mari's New York. What all does Mari's New York make?
Mari's New York right now just makes brownies. We just specialize in brownies and come up with myriad different flavors. I mean, like, the concept of the brownie, and I've always thought of the brownie as the unsung hero of the chocolate world. Like, there, you know, you have lots of wonderful single-origin chocolate bars and flavors and truffles, and the brownie sort of gets pushed aside a little in what it can offer in its specialness.
Well, you have a number of different flavors now, and you even sell sample packs. Now, we've only had the one that was the finalist in the Sophie's.
The caramel sea salt. Yes, that one's pretty fun. I'm a big fan of sweet and savory, salty, sweet, like chocolate-covered pretzels are really fun, partially due to texture, but also just that high-low that you get as the food's sort of playing around in your mouth. And some of the other flavors that we have, and I'm a big fan of change tasting the way it's being described. So if I'm putting out a coconut brownie, you're definitely going to get coconut. I have a Thai coffee brownie that has a lot of coffee in it. So you're not wondering where that coffee is.
There's another thing we must interject here, because we sort of got away from the food as product thing that you talked about. But these things are absolutely the most gorgeously packed.
Yes, and now we understand why the packaging is so gorgeous.
The packaging is absolutely incredible.
Thank you.
And tremendously attractive. I mean, brownies are things people take to their friends on one of the baking sheets, usually. and these are presentation quality boxes, absolutely delightful looking, and inside they're all beautifully wrapped up as well. But I did find the very last one in the box, a mouse had been nibbling at it. I don't know what. I think it might have been a mouse named Anne. I thought they were wonderful because they're just two mouthfuls, just the kind of thing to have right after lunch. But obviously the mouse had a smaller appetite, so there was part of one left.
Wow. Well, they're meant to be small, so that way, I think with any good food product, all you need really is a little. And to me, these are treats. They're not something to gorge on and do a pig up, basically. And you know, growing up with my mother, who offered all these different flavors, I'm not one to, when I go to a restaurant, sometimes I order three appetizers instead of one appetizer main course, so that way I can try different things and different flavors, different textures.
Oh, yeah. And I can think of nothing worse than seeing this huge platter of steak where you, one bite after another, chew on the same stuff. I mean, I just can't stand the thought of it.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I love a great steak. But I think for this, treats or desserts are this fun thing, and anytime I go to a restaurant with my husband, I always want to get different things so we can try different flavors. So with my company, I wanted to offer the assorted pack or the different flavors in small sizes, so that way if you have one, it's enough. It's enough of a treat. But hey, if you want another one, that's okay too. So instead of being committed to a giant brownie, play a little and try different things and share and
Now, before we go, let's talk about how people get their hands on some of these.
Can I mention something?
Oh,
I
sure
forgot to mention is that I mean this was a major win here at Gold Sophie, which is that's the best of your whole category, right?
Yes, it was such an honor really to be awarded this gold trophy. The competition was pretty fierce, and I was, when we were nominated as a finalist, I obviously went to the other competitors and looked them up and saw who else was nominated, and I was like, oh my goodness, I don't know, they're really good, I buy divorce puff pastry all the time, and so, there was a little, I don't know if we're going to win, but
you did. And congratulations.
Exciting.
Now let's do Peter's question. How do people get to know what their options are, and how about a website, and how do they order?
Well, we have a website. It's www.marisny.com. Mari's NY, MariesNewYork.com. And we offer most of our stuff online right now. We just introduced a bunch of seasonal flavors that haven't quite made it to the website yet, but we're in the process of updating our site. And it's offered in a bunch of retailers around the country. So the list of the retailers are on our website as well. So hopefully there's one near you. And if there's not, bug a store and get them to start carrying our product.
Okay. Then do you fill orders online?
Yes, off of our website, you can place orders. We have a really cute little two-piece box for favors or for place card holders. Bergdorf Goodman carries them, and some people go in and just buy a whole bunch to put down for their place cards at tables.
That's a great idea.
It's like a cute little favor box. And then we also offer it in white for weddings or special events, so that way the bride can pick a ribbon color that's matches their wedding colors, so that's a little fun too.
Well, this is wonderful, Mari, and I can't. What's next? What are you going to do next? Expand your product line, probably.
Probably expand the product line. We're still debating what is the next product to introduce, but there's definitely all sorts of ideas that I'm kicking around in my head. I can't stop thinking about, oh, what if I did this, or what if I did that, or, you know, what other flavors do I want to introduce? Because there's so many different great combinations that one can do. It's endless.
Oh, look at, is it Vogue's?
Vogue's chocolate.
I mean, I've never seen so many flavors in my whole entire life. I never thought they'd get this big.
They definitely have a lot of fun playing around with different ingredients and flavors, and that's sort of what I'm trying to do with brownies. It's brownies are a great medium to infuse different flavors into. So I just introduced this one for the fall called Juniper.
Oh wow!
Which I have to say it's one of my new favorite flavors. It's not like gin, juniper, but more if you're taking a walk in the woods. Uh-huh. Like I grew up in Connecticut, and there were maple trees and pine trees, and we had a big juniper tree in our front yard, and, you know, you walk by it, or you crush some of the leaves or pine needles or whatever you want to call it in your hand, and you just get that wonderful smell. And so I wanted to do something that sort of evoked that, and so there's some honey and the juniper berries and a little whole wheat flour, and it just transports you to a very calm, peaceful place.
Wow, I can't wait to taste that one. That sounds fabulous.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and keep us posted on your progress, and we like to follow companies that we are fortunate enough to meet.
Definitely. I'll be sending you some samples when we put that one out. I think that one comes out in October. So.
Right, and don't make any lollipops. I got OD'd on lollipops at this last especially the bacon lollipop. Oh, geez.
I was seeing a lot of bacon lollipops. There was one that was called Man Bait.
Oh, dear.
We thought they tasted awful, and the funny part about it is we know somebody associated with that product.
Yeah, we so, like very much.
So we like very much, but the bacon lollipops were not a success. Anyway, once again, congratulations on the big Sophie win, and I'm sure we'll see you at the Fancy Food Show again next year with another innovative product.
Yay! Well, thank you very much for interview. This is great fun.
Mari, thank you, and goodbye.
Karen Campion, when she's not walking the red carpet, is racing her dog through the vineyards in Sonoma County. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Ann. How are you?
Okay, Karen is the founder, president of Sonoma Syrups, an artisanal syrup company. Karen, tell us a little bit how you got to this point in your life. How long have you been making syrup, and what gave you the inspiration?
Okay, I have been making syrup for the last 5 years, and although I'm a trained architect, I really felt privileged to live in the wine country and to have all this beautiful agriculture and fresh lavender flowers surrounding us. So it just living here is an inspiration to create beautiful products. And as I would make syrup for my family, for iced tea or for sodas, I had the inspiration to think about bottling and how could I share these with people around the country who didn't have the beauty of living in the wine country. And so that's how I started.
So you were making small batches yourself?
I was, for my family, for celebrations, because it's all about bringing, you know, in our family we try to celebrate every small to large event, and it's really that, you know, feeding the family spirit with a celebration, and those syrups are a beverage part of that.
Now, it's old thing, syrup, isn't it?
It is. It was simple syrup is a basic culinary ingredient inspired. It was in the early American cookbook in the late 1800s made from cane loaf sugar, and they would reduce that with water and use that to infuse cakes and make their pastries and treats at that time.
So it wasn't just a bartender's invention, although bartenders use it too, of course.
And, of course, and that's where we're having a great amount of success. Rebecca Chapra just returned from Tales of the Cocktail in New Orleans this week. We met with her yesterday and learned about all the incredible trends and how our acai black currant is being used as a low sugar superfruit syrup in cocktails as well as lavender. We did something with Square One, which is an organic vodka, because when you have great spirits, you certainly want to put the highest quality syrups in there that have all natural ingredients.
Now remember your little sign, Karen, okay. and you snuck something in on us there, because you moved from simple syrups with relatively conventional things in them like Meyer lemon, and then you snuck in a superfruit,
which is the reason we were in New York accepting the Ingredi Silver Finalist Award Outstanding New Product, and that is our new line of. Of syrups that, I mean, our whole mission of our company has certainly been a twist on old classics, and we've always been about healthy, quality Sonoma Valley flavors, but now we're even being more healthy, creating this superfruit syrup, which has, of course, a powerful supply of antioxidants.
Now, you've made the transition from making these at home to having, you don't have your own factory, do you? You have someone who makes these for you?
Certainly, we make these in the wine country, and we were in 2003, it was discovered by Wayne Sonoma and launched nationwide, and that's really how our company
started. Oh, okay, so you really got a huge lift from being picked up by Chuck Williams and Co., huh?
Absolutely, and he used to live in Sonoma, and he
Didn't he die?
Oh, I know him.
He died.
Did he?
Maybe he died, and that's why he doesn't live in Sonoma anymore.
I just had my photograph with him.
Oh, gosh, yeah, I'm
he's
wrong.
Not so dead anymore. No, he actually he started doing something different recently, but I can't remember what it was.
Okay. So I know he was there at my first initial meeting for 2 hours, tasting lemon lavender sorbet and my infused lemon lavender cakes, and so he was very instrumental in bringing these in to Williams Sonoma, and now we do private label and special projects with them.
Now the Acai-berry one's a particularly clever one, isn't it? Because it if you pour it into a wine glass, it looks like wine. It looks really grown up.
Absolutely, and I was wondering if I could read that quote.
Please do, absolutely.
Okay, great. And this is from Rebecca Schaffer, who's our brand manager in the spirit world. And this is her quote. Jeff Barillas at Manresa in Los Gatos surprised me by pouring a splash of the Sonoma Syrup Co. Acai Black Currant atop sparkling water in a Riedel crystal burgundy glass. I watched as the bubbles dispersed the bright purple stain through the water, and with a swirl, the glass captured the pure essences of the syrup. It was reminiscent of black fruits, many of the flavors found in Cabernet Sauvignon. What a great non-alcoholic option, complete with the antioxidants found in dark skin grapes. And I think that you experienced that in New York, is in that beautiful
glass.
The aroma of that Acai and black currant was very winey.
Oh yes, I think it's just an absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, I'm on a kick of having it for breakfast now with sparkling water, not because your colleague suggested it, because I figured that out a long time ago, but it happens there's no orange juice in the refrigerator now anyway.
Yeah. So. Exactly, and that's a very European thing. That's what they do, just mix with water. And because it is a low sugar and just lightly sweetened with a pure cane, it's a completely healthy thing that you're doing.
Now, having achieved what you've already achieved, what's next?
Well, first of all, we're very grateful to have received that award in New York.
Yes, it's a Sophie, and it's sort of like the Oscars of the movie entertainment world.
Certainly.
And this is in the food world.
Right, and hence the red carpet walk.
Right.
We are launching this line of superfruits, and again, we have been extremely successful in the commercial hotel, restaurant, cruise line for fancy cocktails. But again, our company is really about the celebrations at home and really keeping those fancy or small and supporting people to know that, you know, remembering that the sparkling water is equal to Prosecco and champagne in terms of celebratory capital. And it's pretty recession-proof for all the VIPs in your family as well. So I think the next line really is concentrating on the superfruits, the mangosteen, the acai pomegranate, and, of course, the acai black currant.
Yeah, Melissa is bringing in real mangosteen.
That's,
I mean, like real live ones, not dried or pickled or anything.
Certainly, it's an ultra-exotic fruit.
Well, it used to come in just as syrup.
Syrup.
Eventually the whole fruit is coming in, but you bring in the juice that way anyway, don't you?
Right, the puree and concentrate.
Just because you can't afford to transport the whole fruit.
Absolutely, and it's a really pure product that blends easily with our pure cane sugar.
Yeah. Can you grow passion fruit in
California?
That I'm certain in greenhouses, but I don't...
Not outside, huh?
No. I mean, the acai is from the Amazon palm tree that's harvested in rainforest. So the acai...
It grows on top of this. It's the strangest looking tree I've ever seen in my life.
Why were you asking about passion fruit?
I was just thinking of all the flavors we've been tasting with the so-called super... fruit things, passion fruit.
Oh, is passion fruit considered
a superfruit?
It's not
really considered a superfruit, but they always throw it in because the flavor is so good.
In Australian gardens, it's practically considered a weed.
I know, yeah.
Because everybody has one.
And Whole Foods sells them for $3 a piece.
Yeah, it's
what could you make with one passion fruit?
Plus, they probably aren't any good anyway.
You had mentioned that we also, our classic syrups are certainly used in very cool cocktails, such as a pomegranate as a classic grenadine. And so you had mentioned that before. And I just wanted to talk about the joy of that product, that I was at the San Francisco Opera last Sunday and went to Jardiniere afterwards. And Brian, who's one of the fantastic bartenders in San Francisco, I watched him prepare a maiden's blush.
Uh-huh.
Pomegranate syrup. So that women love these types of drinks, and the trend really is towards the less.
Oh yeah, I'm so sick. I don't like sweet, especially the really sickening ones. When people were drinking those odd colored cocktails, you taste them. The rims were they were edged with sugar. They were just disgusting.
Yeah, have you run across Scott Beatty? Who used to be Osiris?
Yes,
okay,
absolutely,
right.
Absolutely. Super. And we are certainly in, with Dale DeGroff, we're in his Essential Cocktail book, and Eric Felton certainly writes about us, and we have a great rapport with him. And again, Rebecca was at Tales of the Cocktail, which is the top cocktail conference in the country in New Orleans.
Yes, when we were in New Orleans in December, I think we went to that museum, didn't we, Rabbit?
The Museum of the Cocktail.
We did. I must confess, I hope they had a great event there because it's just about the most disappointing museum I've ever been in my whole life.
I think,
listeners, get the message here. At $2, admission is too high.
Okay. I'll mention that to them.
But it's probably a hell of a good place to have a party.
Yeah.
It sounded as if it was.
Well, Karen, we should mention that you're still architecting.
Certainly.
Yeah, and you sound like you have a wonderful life.
I do. I have three boys, three sons that are taller than I am, and they are great water polo players, and one son is a sophomore in college, and they are definitely my taste testers. So nothing is improved unless they actually taste the product and give it the high five, Mom.
Oh, that's cool.
Well, that's a wonderful, it's a wonderful story, and thank you so much for joining us. And
website? Do we have a website?
We forgot.
Of SonomaSyrup.com, and also mentioning you had asked where these were available.
Oh, certainly, yes.
Certainly in August, they will be at Sur La Table across the country.
Oh, that's good.
And Dean and DeLuca stores and the Baker's Catalog.
Oh, that's cool.
Well,
cool.
That's well done. You're going to become so rich and famous you won't know what to do next.
We're grateful for everything. So thank you so
well,
much.
Well, Karen, thank you for befriending us and talking to us.
Absolutely. Great. Thank you, Anne and Pierre.
Okay, and keep us posted.
Absolutely. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, wow, doesn't time fly when you're having fun? That's the end of another program.
Yes.
And we were going to take a minute to tell you about our adventures upcoming as we're headed for Peter's native land, and we're going to revisit some old friends like Alain Roux at the Waterside Inn and the wonderful couple at Percy's. And we're going to reacquaint with Chef Michael Caine at Gidley Park.
Love him, yeah.
And stay there in the luxury of a totally renovated place since we were there.
Yeah, it was the renovation last time
five
we were there.
5 years ago. Yeah. So we'll be bringing you that story most likely in next week's program. And in the meantime, between now and then, we hope you'll have a wonderful time. And you'll remember, of course, your friends are on the Menu Radio, and you'll come back and see us again. And what's the last word we say?
Bye-bye.